That is one beautiful airplane. May God bless the United States of America, and God bless Boeing. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
You already know what it is, people. You clicked on this. You know what we're talking about today. We're talking about the only major American aircraft manufacturer in the world.
Yeah, we're talking about Boeing today.
It's sad because there used to be this phrase, if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going. Apparently, flying on a Boeing plane used to mean something. It used to give you a sense of safety.
Yeah. Now it's like, if it's Boeing, I hope my husband is going.
And I hope he wrote me in the will. Actually, I'm going to Dallas in the next couple weeks, and I was booking flights, and I was like, should I jot down a quick will on my notes app?
I mean, some airplane parts might fall off the plane, but I don't think we're going to be seeing any big crashes anytime soon now with everybody looking at Boeing.
Yeah, well, you never know. And I did make some verbal promises to people. Like Simona wants all my kitchen appliances, and Siobhan's gonna get my closet. So
no, I want the croisette.
All right, okay. Well, you'll have to duke it out with her. It's nice to know that me dying won't stop my lovely friends from living their best lives.
My life will be improved with with the, what do you call it, the big
the
one.
Dutch oven. You want the Dutch oven.
Dutch oven, that's what
you
I want.
You want the green one or the off-white one?
I'll take both of them.
Okay. Anyway, Boeing. Annual revenue for 2023 was $77.7 billion. And I was looking a little bit into their financials, and because the 2023 annual report isn't out yet, I was looking at the year 2022. Their annual revenue for 2022 was $66.6 billion. Which I just think is a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're doing some sort of like hippie angel numbers shtick, because they went from 66.6 billion in 2022 to 77.7 billion in 2023. It seems a little on the nose.
The mark of the Boeing.
That's right. So today we're going to talk a little bit about this company. But first, let's talk about the current scandal. The Boeing whistleblower.
The guy who got suicided. May have committed suicide under very suspicious circumstances.
This is a guy who was a quality manager at Boeing for 32 years. He was about to testify against Boeing. You know, he already gave his formal deposition and he was going to give more testimony. But of course, as you guys probably heard, he was found dead in a hotel parking lot.
Mm-hmm. In his car.
The death of a former Boeing employee turned whistleblower. 62-year-old John Barnett found dead on Friday from what the coroner calls an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound.
The flights are falling apart, the maintenance is bad, and he was one of the whistleblowers that was exposing all of this, and he was found dead after Boeing asked him to stay an extra day. Something does not sound right here.
Who fights a legal battle for years and years and years, and then the year when Boeing's problems are all coming to light and proving you right, then you decide to off yourself? Like, once like the world is like totally turning to your side, then you're over it?
It doesn't matter your political affiliation, your socioeconomic background, your education level. We all agreed that the second we heard the news about that Boeing whistleblower, we were like, mm-mm, that man did not kill himself, okay? Somebody at Boeing or the company itself had to have had something to do with that shit. That man was a whistleblower in the middle of a trial.
And it may not necessarily be directed by Boeing in like an official way where it's like, you know, an official company project, but there could be people connected to Boeing or like individuals who stood to be really negatively affected by his testimony. Or even it could have been a situation where they drove him to commit suicide, because you are dealing with a traumatized guy.
Yeah, he said he was being spied on, harassed by employees at Boeing. He was humiliated. He was financially ruined. Like, it's not an easy job being a whistleblower. Like, maybe there's some heroism to it. Maybe people respect you, but it's really a tough job.
So he was giving testimony on defective parts being recycled and put onto new planes, right? So at the very best, it's convenient for Boeing and its management. And I will say that he did say, quote, "If anything happens to me, it's not suicide."
That's pretty damning.
A close family friend of Barnett says he predicted he might wind up dead, that a story could surface that he killed himself. But he told her, don't believe it.
I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? No, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide.
As soon as this guy died, the whole internet was like, he was killed, you know? And we're all speculating and joking that this man was murdered, but hopefully there's also a serious and impartial investigation, because what kind of message does that send to companies that just want to kill whistleblowers, that, you know, people will joke for a couple of days, but then there's no real consequences. The last thing I want to say about John before we move on, two things. One, RIP. And the second thing is that he was really smart. In a 2014 performance review, his manager, so like we said, John was a quality manager at Boeing. His manager, who was a senior quality manager, said, quote, "John is very knowledgeable, almost to a fault, as it gets in the way at times when issues arise. John likes to be right and at times re-challenges issues that appear resolved." So he may have gotten killed because he was too annoying. He's the guy that like knows more than the boss, you know?
Yeah. And it is worth mentioning that, you know, in the documentary on Netflix John Barnett appeared in, he mentions that he got in trouble for writing down manufacturing problems in the Boeing warehouses. So he got in trouble for like doing his job well.
He said, quote, "Boeing quit listening to their employees. And so every time I'd raise my hand and say, hey, we've got a problem over here, they would attack the messenger and ignore the message." And seems like they really attacked the messenger this time. In a hotel parking lot. He also said in that documentary, quote, "My pay was docked." This is what you just said. "My pay was docked for putting quality concerns in writing. They told us flat out they do not want anything in documentation so they can maintain culpable deniability."
They were probably like, show, don't tell. It was like a game of charade. So three syllables, fuselage.
And the fuselage is the main body of the aircraft.
Fuselage.
For those of you who are idiots, you don't even know what a fuselage is. I mean, Barrett wasn't the kind of guy they could really character assassinate. He was a smart guy. I mean, obviously he's an engineer, but beyond that, he was a good communicator.
He was known as a Funkel.
Yeah.
Which we did mention on Pod Damn America, but yeah, the guy was a Funkel.
What does that mean?
Fun uncle.
Oh, right.
You didn't know that?
Funkel. Excuse me. Sorry for my ignorance, of course.
So he had a couple nicknames around the plant. I guess when, you know, when you're around building airplanes, you're just hanging out with the guys. You're giving each other nicknames. He was nicknamed Mitch, and then he was also nicknamed Swampy because he's from the swamps of Louisiana. He has like a southern draw.
From day one, it's just all been about schedule and hurry up and just get it done. Push the planes out. We're behind schedule. You know, we don't have time to worry about issues that y'all bring up.
So he was a really beloved guy. I think it's also important to know there are a bunch of whistleblowers coming forward for different lawsuits that Boeing has pending. So he's not the only one. So in order for Boeing to really take this silencing seriously, they'd have to kill a bunch of them. But also, it does send a message to kill one whistleblower. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
And of course, we don't know that he was murdered. Again, I hope there's an investigation. It's just very convenient.
Yeah, the other thing is, like, the law firm that he was working with, they were like, this is the best witness we've ever had, we ever worked with. The Boeing lawyers, they actually protested in court that the witness, John Barnett, knew the documents too well and quoted from them from memory, which I didn't know you could object to that in court. Like, object, Your Honor, this man is too accurate.
You know, he was going after one of the most powerful companies in the history of the world, and I'm not exaggerating. Boeing is a really big engine of the U.S. economy, and it is the biggest exporter. And so his testimony could have potentially costed Boeing billions. It could have potentially been embarrassing, not only for the company, but for whatever individuals, you know, he may have had evidence against.
Just to illustrate how important and big this company is, especially to the U.S., Export-Import Bank is basically nicknamed Boeing's bank because it provides financing overseas for a lot of America's exported products. And the biggest export right now is like commercial jets. And who is selling these commercial jets? Usually the president is making these deals. When they go to visit foreign leaders, they're sitting down, they're selling airplanes like Girl Scout cookies.
Other than maybe the CEO of Boeing, I don't know anybody who's done more to sell Boeing planes around the world than me.
You may have heard Trump say, God bless you, God bless, may God bless the United States of America, and God bless Boeing, when he visited a plant in South Carolina.
And I want to thank the great people of South Carolina. God bless you. May God bless the United States of America, and God bless Boeing.
Obama once said that he's one of the top salesmen at Boeing, and he expects a gold watch from the company when he steps down, because this company is so intertwined with the highest levels of power in the U.S.
I'm expecting a gold watch from Boeing at the end of my presidency, because I know that I'm on the list of top salesmen. At Boeing.
And those jokes that Trump and Obama made are a reflection of the fact that the U.S. like sells weapons all around the world, right? And so not only is Boeing cozy with the FAA, but they're cozy with the military and our intelligence agencies, right? Because remember, Boeing has, well, not remember, I'll tell you for the first time, Boeing has the commercial airlines business, right? They develop and produce and they market like these jets that we've all flown in. Chances are you've flown in a Boeing if you've ever, you know, taken a plane. And then they have the defense and security side of the business, right? This is research and development, production of all of these weapons, right? Military aircraft, trainer aircraft, rotorcraft and tilt rotor aircraft, which, like, if you know, you know.
which we don't know.
And I don't. but they make a ton of military weaponry, right? And then also command systems, control systems, computers, intelligence, like all this kind of surveillance technology that you'd think a quote-unquote defense contractor would have. Satellite systems, whatever. But the point is, this is a huge company. It has a lot of power. And of course, horrible from like an anti-imperialist perspective. Obviously, it's the fourth largest defense contractor on Earth. People that sit on Boeing's board also sit on the board of the Atlantic Council and the Council on Foreign Relations and other similar think tanks like it that end up influencing a lot of U.S. public policy, blah, 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 blah. But in terms of the scandal about the commercial side of the business, we see that Boeing is a huge engine of the U.S. economy, and this company has a lot of power, right? And so that's probably why it's able to get away with murder.
Yeah, perhaps. Allegedly.
Oh, wait, I didn't even mean John's murder. I mean the murder of the passengers, which
350 people.
Yeah.
Right. Oh yeah. Those people.
So let's go back to where this began. The two major crashes in 2018 and 2019.
It may not sound like a lot to you that there were two crashes, but passenger aircraft, they're designed to be so safe, so foolproof. You know, if there's any kind of problem, you can make an emergency landing. Usually the planes that do crash because of poor weather or pilot error, those planes are usually like small and don't have all of these checks and balances that a big passenger air jet would have.
So the first one was in 2018. This was a Lion Air flight. Lion Air is based in Jakarta. Because of that, after the crash happened, you know, 13 minutes after takeoff, the response had a little bit of like racism and scapegoating peppered into it on the U.S. side. They wanted to blame Indonesia. They wanted to blame the fact that the pilot, you know, wasn't trained properly, right? There was even a comment along the lines of, an American pilot is trained properly and would have never done this. Ignoring, of course, the fact that the pilot actually finished his training in the U.S.
The airline probably needed to do a better job of making sure its pilots understood exactly what to do in case the aircraft was performing in a unique, unusual way, and how to get out of the problem.
Should passengers getting on a 737 MAX be concerned?
I don't think so. Certainly in the United States, they understand how to operate this aircraft.
We found out that behind the scenes, Boeing was saying that an American pilot would never have gotten into this kind of a situation.
But it turns out this had nothing to do with the pilot. This had to do with the MCAS system. So let's quickly explain what this is, because this is really interesting to me. So what Boeing did with this plane was kind of give it a mind of its own, right? Exactly what you want to hear when you're getting on a plane.
Yeah.
So this is
AI this plane.
Pretty much. So this is the maneuvering.
As a large language model, I cannot do an emergency landing.
Very good. So this is called the...
I have a feeling that's going to get cut. But go ahead.
No. It's funny. So this is called the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, or MCAS. The MCAS system is designed to automatically push the nose of the plane down when the angle of the plane is too high. That's the gist of it. There's some more technical stuff, but no one cares, and it's not relevant. The MCAS is basically designed to automatically push the angle of the plane down if the angle of the plane gets too high.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of the Lion Air crash in 2018, the angle of attack system detector was broken. So MCAS was activated repeatedly. And so you have this system pushing the nose of the plane down, even though it did not need to be pushed down. So this is a case of technology kind of overriding what the pilot wanted to do. The pilot was like, what the fuck is happening? Because, as we learned later, Boeing didn't train pilots about MCAS. In fact, they didn't even tell them about the MCAS system. According to the Wall Street Journal, Boeing, quote, withheld information from the pilots, right? So, I mean, naturally, when the pilots union heard about this, they hated that, because as a pilot, you want to know as much about the airplane as possible. But it is really insane, in retrospect, that pilots were being trained to fly planes, and this training didn't mention that there was this automatic system designed to push the nose of the plane down, right? And also, we know now that Boeing made the MCAS system on this plane basically rely on one sensor. So we have one sensor controlling the MCAS system, this self-hijacking system, right? This crazy powerful system that can take control of the plane is controlled by one sensor. And you never want to have a safety critical system with a single point of failure, because, of course, if that sensor is damaged or faulty, it's going to send the wrong message to the MCAS system. And then the MCAS system is going to try to take over the plane from the pilots.
And how can that sensor be damaged? A small bird can take
anything.
Out that sensor.
It
yeah,
could be
anything. I could just imagine Boeing going into like a congressional hearing and being like, well, this is your culprit, and showing a picture of a sparrow. This is the reason why these planes crashed.
Well, that's what happened with the Miracle on the Hudson, right?
Oh, yeah. I was there. I was watching it happen.
Me too.
No, I wasn't.
I was watching it happen. I was in Midtown on the 45th floor of the Viacom building. Anyway, moving forward. So we have this crazy powerful system controlled by one sensor that can take over the plane from the pilot. And that is the reason that the Lion Air passengers, unfortunately, died, right? So in March 2019, just 19 weeks after the Lion Air crash, we have another crash. And again, it's the same plane, the Boeing 737 MAX 8. And this time it's an Ethiopian Airlines flight.
Why did a new Boeing 737 crash just minutes after taking off from Ethiopia's capital? The airline confirming just a few minutes ago, there are no survivors. This was a brand new Boeing 737, less than a year old.
So after the second crash, people are like, okay, what's going on here? The CEO of Boeing, of course, came out and was like, quote, we have full confidence in the safety of the MAX, but other countries weren't buying it. China grounded the plane. China was like, go to your room. China grounded the 737 MAX 8, and then other countries followed. And then finally, the U.S. was like basically last to do it.
We're going
to
be issuing an emergency order of prohibition to ground all flights of the 737 MAX 8 and the 737 MAX 9.
And then again, they found out that the cause of this was also the MCAS system. And so finally, after basically every other country did that, you have President Trump coming out announcing the grounding of the plane.
Go to your room. You're grounded.
You know what's funny is I hear people's Trump impressions more often than I actually listen to Trump speak these days. I know the exaggerated Trump impression more than I can actually picture his voice. Anyway, moving forward. So after these two major crashes, the DOJ actually brought criminal charges against Boeing, right? Saying that they defrauded the U.S. government. They defrauded the FAA during the certification process for the 737 MAX jets. But we didn't really see any real reform. So literally the day after, literally the day after January 6, 2021, and, you know, of course, this news was a bit buried in the Capitol riot news, but the Department of Justice announced that they had closed the investigation into Boeing and its cover-ups of the MCAS software, the self-hijacking software, right? And so,
oh, good, it's done. Great, yeah. Everything's fixed.
Yeah, Boeing basically had to agree to say, like, trust me, bro, you know, we're going to prioritize safety now. They did agree to pay $2.5 billion, but as many have pointed out, if you look at those actual payments, $2.27 billion of that were payments that Boeing needed to make to its customers, right, United and others, and the families of the crash victims already, because those parties' lawyers had been working for years to get those payments. So we see this $2.5 billion number being reported a lot, and it is true that Boeing agreed to pay $2.5 billion, but most of that was money Boeing had already agreed to pay the airlines that purchased the MAX jets but couldn't fly them, right? Because they were grounded. So really, what the DOJ slapped Boeing with was a $244 million fine. Not the $2.5 billion, even though the DOJ in their press release, I saw that they tried to take credit for that bigger number. But that is them paying the airlines, their customers that purchased the MAX jets but couldn't fly them. That's part of business, right? The actual fine from the DOJ was $244 million. And that may sound like a lot. And of course, that's a lot of money for me and you. But it was really a slap on the wrist for Boeing, which is why the families of the crash victims were appalled at the news of this settlement, right? But really, we should all be appalled.
How much was it, the fine? $500 million?
It was a $243 million criminal penalty. That's the penalty. And then the rest of the money was $500 million to relatives who lost loved ones and $1.77 billion to its customers, to airlines who were affected by the MAX groundings, right? So those last two numbers, the $500 million and the $1.77 billion, which is the big one, that is what happened in the course of business. That's not the U.S. government punishing Boeing. Anyway, so to sum it up, both the 2018 and 2019 crashes were tied to the MCAS system, the MCAS software, right? The MCAS software was supposed to stabilize the jet because of why you explained the jet was much heavier. It was supposed to stabilize it, but actually it caused the plane to nosedive, right? And in both crashes, incorrect data from a faulty sensor, because like we said, this whole thing was resting on one sensor, caused the MCAS to misfire and forced the planes to nose down repeatedly, which is just so, it's really like a movie. It's so dystopian. Like, imagine like being the pilot in there and the plane has a mind of its own and it's going down and you're like, what the fuck is happening?
So why would Boeing have this system that they didn't want to tell anybody about that led to these fatal crashes? Why would Boeing put a override system on this plane and tell no one about it? The story really goes back to 2011 when United Airlines broke Boeing's monopoly and decided instead to buy some jets from Airbus, the European manufacturer, which is headquartered in France. That's why I say Airbus, but it's also manufactured by a consortium of EU countries. And United basically says to Boeing, look, Airbus has engines that are fuel efficient. Our number one cost is fuel. So you either make a fuel efficient plane or we're not even going to do business with you anymore.
Like, this is a big deal because United is Boeing's biggest customer in the world.
And so then in a rush, they decided not to make a new plane, but instead to retrofit their 1967 plane, the 737, and just put these bigger engines that are more fuel efficient on this plane. So what happens is it upsets the natural tilt of the plane. So they had this MCAS system to also make it feel like the pilots are flying the same plane. They're not doing anything different, because if you're selling a new plane, you need to train pilots and do simulation training to make sure it's safe. And that is very expensive. It costs millions and millions of dollars to do that. So they rush out this 737 plane to get these fuel efficient engines and compete with Airbus.
Right. It's an obvious point to make, but it's important to say profit was put ahead of safety, right? Ahead of people's lives. In order to make sure that they could get this plane out fast and keep that business, they rushed this plane, right? And adequate safety procedures were obviously not performed. And this is something that, of course, happens across the board in corporations, right? You know, the pursuit of shareholder profit and the greed of upper management will often trump health, safety, morality, right? Depending on the industry you're in. This happens all over the place. But it's just it's a really poignant example with Boeing because of the dramatic nature of a plane crash, right? Where people die suddenly. But of course, this happens in other industries too, and it also has devastating effects. It's just more dramatic when you're talking about an airline, right?
Yeah, it's not like you're picking up a bag of chips and you're like, this seems like there's less chips in there than before.
Right.
Also going back to Airbus and Boeing, so they had like a 17-year trade war where they were trying to impose tariffs on each other. Airbus sells a lot of planes to the U.S. U.S. sells a lot of planes to Europe. So this is a problem for both of them. And Boeing would point to Airbus's public funding and say, well, this is giving Airbus an unfair advantage because they have all these public subsidies. And Airbus would shoot back, well, okay, maybe for your commercial sector, you don't have public funding, but in essence, you are a publicly subsidized company because of the defense contracts that you have. And they're totally inflated.
Yeah, it's like the worst of both worlds, right? Because they're publicly subsidized, but they're not held accountable by the public sector. The real culprit here is the Wall Street-focused management, right? The greed of upper management, the pursuit of shareholder profit, and this like corporate culture that was all about shortcuts, right? Saving money, profit-driven mm-hmm. shortcuts, right? So mm-hmm. Boeing started as like more of an engineering-led firm. This is, you know, when we got the if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going phrase, because it used to be an engineer only management company before a big merger with McDonnell Douglas.
Yeah. 1996, there was a merger between Boeing and McDonnell Douglas, who many claim is the reason for the corporate culture rot at Boeing, because McDonnell Douglas was a manufacturer that was like known to subcontract everything to make sure it can count their beans and not use unionized workers and outsource every chance that they got. But I'm not sure if it's really the merger, or this is just the direction that a lot of American companies are headed towards. Everything is getting outsourced, especially in the 90s. My father had like a carpet manufacturing plant in New Jersey, and big corporate companies were able to outsource and push small business out or take over these small businesses like McDonnell Douglas. So a lot of people think that this McDonnell Douglas culture kind of infected Boeing, but I think it was just the course of business that was happening in the 90s.
The bigger you get, the less involved in the day-to-day the people making these really big decisions are, right?
Yeah, so engineers were in charge, and then at one point it became the Wall Street guys were in charge, the business execs, the MBAs.
Right.
So it was a complete culture shift.
Again, like we said, cost pressure and time pressure happens in every industry, right? But here people die. And so the Netflix documentary about Boeing called Downfall talks about this culture, about how there used to be more of a focus on safety, but now the focus was just on speed, right? And so one of the people that they interviewed to make this point,
Her name is Cynthia Kitchens. She was a quality manager, just like John Barnett was. And in the Netflix doc, she says, quote, "Instead of fixing problems, everything was about speed. Everything was about getting stuff done. Let's move it. Let's get it done. You can't stop. You can't slow down." So I guess to speed up production, they got quality inspectors and quality managers out of the picture. They have like one quality person for almost a whole building on each shift, and we used to have 15. And of course, as we mentioned, another person interviewed in the doc is John Barnett. And this is where he discusses how his pay was docked for putting quality concerns in writing. And you know, I'm not an engineer. I've never worked in aviation. I've never worked in a field where like lives are at stake in this way. But we kind of all know the feeling, right? Like there's nothing more frustrating than dealing with like company leadership that's just like hell-bent on speed, on getting something out, a product or service, just like out the door as fast as possible. And they don't want to hear about the pesky little details like quality concerns. And this is what this is what was really grinding John's gears. John was like, "The landing gear is faulty." That grinds my gears. Sorry, it's such a stupid joke. It's not even funny. It's not even funny.
No, I think it's funny. I laughed.
There was also this really interesting Al Jazeera investigation from 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Where they went into a Boeing plant.
Yeah.
You like this?
Yeah, this is the fun part, guys.
They went into a Boeing plant and they asked 15 random employees, like, "Would you fly in one of these planes?" And 10 out of 15 of them said no.
Oh,
so
no.
Al Jazeera interviewed this Boeing engineer named Cynthia Cole, and she said, quote, "They're shortchanging the engineering process to meet a schedule."
And they're not even allowing quality control to do their job. And they're telling them this is how it's going to be. I don't see how these people who write these things and agree to these things, you know, on the signatures down here, how they sleep at night. I just don't get it. You know, how can you do that? As an engineer, I find that reprehensible.
This Al Jazeera piece also talks about how there were concerns about drugs on the premises, like a lot of cocaine and meth. And they interviewed this one Boeing engineer whose identity was protected. And he said, quote, "It's all coke and painkillers. They don't test nobody."
People be getting high on the job. I mean, you may want to chill with the guy who's smoking weed and doing coke on the job, but you don't want to climb in the helicopter that he built. It's a good hang, not a good engineer. But in 2011, there was also a huge drug bust that was conducted at a Pennsylvania plant where Boeing was manufacturing defense aircraft, including the Chinook helicopter.
Yeah, so 23 like past and then current employees were arrested in this drug bust at the Boeing plant in Pennsylvania. They were charged with selling oxy and fentanyl, and they were like literally selling these drugs on site at the Boeing facility.
Crazy.
This was like kind of a high profile drug bust, right? Because the DEA was like, users of these drugs like played a critical role in manufacturing military aircraft, such as the V-22 Osprey, which is this military aircraft with a capacity for 24 seated troops. It can be armed with machine guns, right? This is something that's used by the US Air Force, the Marines, mm-hmm. the Navy, and we also sell it to Japan.
It's the equivalent of an armored tank, but in the air, a troop transporter, basically.
And it's kind of funny, like maybe these employees, like maybe this is actually like, maybe they're like anti-imperialist activists. intentionally fucking
let's
up.
Take the optimist view.
Another one of the aircraft they were making at this plant was the H-47 Chinook helicopter, which is the Army's main heavy troop and supply transport aircraft that also can be armed with machine guns. Originally used in the Vietnam War, but more recently widely used in the U.S. occupation of Iraq, both the first and the second one, and the occupation of Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. So these are the ones that the Taliban has been trying to learn how to fly and crashing.
Well, actually, it's funny you mention that because the single deadliest crash during the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan was when the Taliban shot one of these Chinook helicopters down with a rocket-propelled grenade and killed 38 people, mostly U.S. personnel, but it was sad that one military dog was also killed. That's the only sad part. Yeah.
I feel bad for the soldiers, too, but...
Yeah, I'm kidding. Obviously, all family. Human life is valuable, blah, blah, blah. People join the military because they're poor and they want health care. I get it. But
and
also,
college.
Like, shut the fuck up.
Okay. And you might be wondering, like, wouldn't you be paid well building military helicopters? Like, why would you need a side hustle?
Yeah, why do you need to sell oxy and fentanyl at the plant?
I think the answer to that question goes back to 2001, when Boeing had usually manufactured its planes in the state of Washington, which is a stronghold of labor movements, and the labor union was very strong. So they decided, you know, what would be a good idea? To start moving its manufacturing elsewhere where unions aren't so strong. We can pay people less, you know, then they can supplement their income with side hustles like selling oxy. So they move a lot of their manufacturing, one, to South Carolina because it's a right-to-work state and it's very easy to bust unions. Boeing has a long history of fighting these unions outside of Washington. They've fired people. They're tied up with lawsuits with the NLRB. And so some of these employees in Pennsylvania who were probably not unionized at that point probably didn't like the pay that they were getting for the amount of work they were doing at these warehouses and possibly needed to supplement their income.
It's so funny, like the story really has everything. So it turns out that Boeing's planes are built like shit in part because of fucking union busting. So yes, Boeing, like you said, Boeing eventually moved all of its 787 production to South Carolina. And of course, you lose that institutional knowledge.
That institutional knowledge. Yeah, you have people who are highly motivated too. People were proud to be part of the union. People really took pride in their job, and a lot of those benefits were slashed. The job protection was slashed. You have people nervous about losing their job. Right. They're not going to be happy workers. So why aren't Airbus planes falling apart in the sky? Why aren't they crashing because of a software system that's meant to override the pilot because they were rushed out into the production line and onto the market? Why is this not happening to Airbus? Well, the part of that story is that 46,000 of Airbus's roughly 130,000 employees work in the company's German factories, where by law they have to routinely discuss production and safety issues with managers in workers' councils. And so these workers are really empowered to have a voice. And yeah, you have, I guess, a portion of Boeing employees in a union, but the rest of these workers, thousands of them, don't really have a voice and lack mechanisms to work through management. Management is telling people like John Barnett to shut the fuck up. Airbus's four largest shareholders, in order, you have the government of France, the government of Germany,
yep,
Capital Research Management Company, the government of Spain. Now, you compare that with Boeing's four largest shareholders, the Vanguard Group, Vanguard Group Subfiler, Newport Trust Company, State Street Corporation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk like, oh my God, Boeing can't handle itself. Like, it probably should be nationalized. Airbus is partially nationalized.
True, like in an indirect way. And like, just side note, like, if you look up any of the largest corporations, chances are largest shareholders will include Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock. All of the biggest conglomerates are all owned by the same four or five firms that all also own each other. But that is for someone else's podcast. This is a technology podcast.
We'll get into finance here and there, but not too much.
We'll definitely do an episode on digital currency, if not several. But, you know, we're keeping the mission narrow. We're keeping the mission narrow. Anyway, the other thing to mention here is that, like, we have no meaningful antitrust laws in these United States, right? I mean, we do, but
they're not enforced. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, people joke that laws against jaywalking are enforced more than antitrust laws in the U.S. these days. And obviously, when you have a monopoly, this can affect quality, right? Because there's no alternatives for companies like United or whatever to go to, right? Sometimes people will look at the prefix mono in monopoly and be like, companies like Boeing are not a monopoly. But that's not true. Both members of a duopoly can be a monopoly, right? Like Apple and Google in the smartphone market, right? Apple and Android. Boeing is still a monopoly and still should be not violating these antitrust laws, right? That's point number one. Point number two is that it's not so simple that all of these customers are just going to go to Airbus now, right? Airbus's A320 line is sold out to 2030. Sales extend beyond 2030. It's not like Airbus can just snap their fingers and provide like a bajillion new airplanes. And so a lot of these airlines kind of have no real choice but to stick with Boeing. There's no like real fire under Boeing's ass, I guess is my main point. You know, maybe the stock drops a little bit, but if you zoom out and look at the trajectory of the stock, they're going to bounce back. If the US government doesn't impose some sort of penalty, Boeing management doesn't really have a reason to care. The market is not going to make them care. We need regulators to make them care, right? We need some sort of penalty or some sort of incentive to do better, because the market incentives to do better are really weak. Mm-hmm. So what kind of regulation is a company like Boeing dealing with? Well, first, let's talk about the Federal Aviation Administration, right? Which is the body that in the U.S., Boeing's commercial aircraft products are required to comply with.
And we have talked about the FAA when we talked about SpaceX and how they've green-lighted a lot of things that are questionable.
Right. And so just to take a step back, for a company like Boeing, new aircraft models and new derivative aircraft are required to obtain FAA certification prior to entry into the service. But what's key here is that there's a very close relationship between Boeing and the FAA. And so even though Boeing's commercial aircrafts are required to comply with FAA regulations governing production, quality systems, airworthiness, which is an industry term.
I can't believe that's an industry term.
and operational safety, even though Boeing has to comply with those FAA regulations, what we're dealing with in the case of Boeing is beyond regulatory capture, right? So we've often used the term regulatory capture to describe close relationships between private corporations and the government agencies that are supposed to keep them in check. Those corporations can influence the government agencies. People from those corporations and people from those agencies often go around the revolving door, right, and work for each other.
One day you're regulating the airline, and the next day you're working for it. You can't possibly be tough on the industry that you're regulating, because you'll never get that plum job after you leave. The regulators at the FAA will rarely cross Boeing. They simply won't.
But in the case of Boeing and the FAA, it's beyond that, because the FAA actually delegated a lot of oversight to the corporations themselves. And we saw this really ramp up in the early 2000s, right? Boeing itself is in charge of duties like inspections and vetting engineering designs.
I gotta say about myself, I'm doing a great job. How about a pat on the back for myself?
It's like when the cops investigate like a case of police brutality. It's like, maybe we have someone else investigate that. anyone else? This is really a case study of the failures of self-regulation, right? The FAA has been like delegating some part of its oversight responsibilities to Boeing starting in the 50s, but this is really intensified over time. So here's a quote from Politico. Aviation unions and other critics offered dire warnings in 2004 when the FAA proposed expanding the role of aircraft manufacturers like Boeing in deciding whether their planes were safe to fly. It would be, quote, reckless, they wrote.
You know when you catapult 300 people into the sky, maybe you should make sure those things work correctly.
It would be, quote, reckless, they wrote, and would, quote, lower the safety of the flying public and would lead to, quote, ever-increasing air disaster. And remember, we're talking about all aircraft manufacturers, but let's be fucking for real. We're talking about Boeing. Boeing is the only U.S. aircraft manufacturer that's major. Mm. There are smaller companies, but we're talking about Boeing.
Yeah. You have to see this in context with the competition with Airbus. The FAA is trying to help Boeing move its product faster by delegating the process, by outsourcing the process to this company so that they can compete with the A320.
Yeah, exactly. There was a Bloomberg reporter who was talking about this, and they said, quote, the regulator, meaning the FAA, the regulator came to feel almost that it worked for Boeing and the managers at the FAA really came to treat Boeing as its customer rather than the flying public as the people it was serving. So it's exactly what you're saying, right? Like, the FAA is trying to help Boeing. And after these two awful crashes, Boeing was under a microscope, and the FAA was as well, right? Because people were like, maybe the fox shouldn't be guarding the hen house, right? Maybe FAA handed over too much of the regulatory duties to Boeing, because, again, FAA handed over elements of safety certification to Boeing itself to the point where Boeing could certify its own planes as safe. So after that, after those two awful crashes, Boeing and the FAA were under a microscope, and FAA put some more safety inspectors in factories. And what did Boeing do? Well, Boeing got rid of their CEO, right? But boom, Alaska. This brings us to the Alaska incident.
In January of 2024, here we are. Current Happy day, New my Year. Friends.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. On January 5th, over Portland, Oregon, a door came flying off. Had the plane been at a higher altitude, it would have caused pressure problems and it could have led to death. Apparently, there were door plugs that were just missing.
Right. So, on its face, this is very different than the MCAS failures.
Yeah. The MCAS is, like, a little bit more sinister.
I mean, the image of being in a plane that's taking over from the pilot is just, you can't beat that. So, these are different cases, of course, but they're also similar in that the bottom line was, again, more important than safety, right? In this flight from Portland to Ontario, a panel of the plane called the door plug flew off. And, you know, thank God the pilots made an emergency landing. No one was killed. There were only a few injuries. But passengers reported that when the door blew out, the bang was loud enough to, like, blast through their AirPods and their Beats and, like, actually give them ear damage, according yeah. to
the next time lawsuit. Yeah, next year Bose is gonna come out on the market with some headphones that, like, you won't even hear your plane crashing, you know. It's so noise canceling that you won't hear the screams and cries of the passengers.
So the preliminary investigation by the National Transportation Safety Board says that the jet left Boeing's factory without the four bolts needed to keep the door in place. They're also criticizing the company for not having the documentation available to show who worked on the door plug when the plane was at Boeing's factory.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues was that they were like, oh yeah, we're going to investigate our Wichita plant where this plane was assembled. But the footage from the factory, they like overwrote it, so they just like took the footage that they knew people were gonna look at and basically deleted it.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah, there's a huge cover-up. And in 2005, the company sold its Wichita plant to a private equity firm that slashed costs before unloading the plant to Spirit AeroSystems, different than Spirit Airlines, which has become notorious for its deficient quality inspection practices. About 3 weeks later, it was revealed that the door plug that blew out of the Alaska Airlines plane wasn't actually produced in Wichita. It was produced in Malaysia.
I'm sure that saved the company a lot of money, right?
So a lot of these things are outside of our jurisdiction, the U.S. jurisdiction, now that they're outsourcing all these parts.
Right. And so clearly, this is another case where the company's priorities were on production, right? Not on safety and quality. And even the FAA says as much.
I spoke to FAA Administrator Michael Whitaker today.
There are issues around the safety culture in Boeing. Their priorities have been on production and not on safety and quality.
I can't imagine being on that plane where a fucking door blows out.
Those people must be so traumatized.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you see a plane blow out, you're like, for sure, I'm dying. I'm dead. I'm saying my last rites. I'm calling my family. That's it. But they really lucked out that they were in such low altitude. And another happy ending to the story, some guy found his iPhone completely intact on the ground after falling 16,000 feet.
Washington resident Sean Bates tweeted on Sunday that he found an iPhone on the side of the road that was, quote, still in airplane mode. Wow, he did the right thing.
I never do that.
Still in airplane mode with half a battery and open to a baggage claim for the plane that was involved in Friday's incident. It's honestly too on the nose. Like, the phone was open to baggage claim. It was on airplane mode. The phone might as well have said, I am from Alaska Airlines.
Yeah, that's incredible. What an incredible, heartwarming story.
Good marketing for Apple. By the way, I just got a new phone yesterday for free.
How?
I brought it in. Should I say this on the podcast? Like, what if this gets used against me in a court of law? All right, I'm going to tell a fictional story.
It's parody.
So I brought it in and I said, but I also am kind of friendly with some of the people that work in this store.
Oh, and damn.
So I was like, so like, you know what to do. And he was like, okay, I'm going to put that it's not working and we'll get you a new phone. So he gave me a new phone in this fictional story that I'm making up on the spot.
That's amazing.
I was only able to do that because I had AppleCare. Anyway, this is not interesting, but what is interesting while we're on the topic of Apple is that Apple is also kind of a monopoly, right? I mean, obviously, it's a company with a $2.66 trillion market cap. Like, obviously, it's a monopoly. Duh. Both members of the duopoly are a monopoly. But anyway, the DOJ is suing Apple right now in an antitrust case over the iPhone, saying that Apple violates antitrust laws and basically prevents consumers from having a choice, right? The biggest example that people talk about with this kind of thing is, like, the stigma of the green bubble, right, where Apple makes it a big deal to not have an iPhone. If you get a text from someone without an iPhone,
green bubble,
they make it jarring, right? Because, you know, messages between iPhones are blue and then those from Android phones are green, right? And those from Android phones are also excluded from many iMessage features, right? And so Apple's basically signaling these other phones that aren't iPhones are of poorer quality. This is what the suit from the DOJ alleges. That Apple will intentionally, like, help create a stigma. Also, like, Apple doesn't allow people who don't have iPhones to be, like, part of group chats in the iMessage app, right? So the lawsuit basically talks about this, and it also talks about how this is particularly powerful for certain demographics, like teenagers, who come to, like, dread the ostracism that comes with having an Android phone. And if you think about it, like, you're a teenager, you're getting your first phone, right? This is when you kind of like pick a side, right? And like, pretty much if you get an iPhone when you're a teenager, you're pretty much an Apple customer for life, right? And I'm not, you know, I'm not speaking from above anyone. I have multiple Apple computers. I have an iPhone. I am guilty also of making fun of people when they have green bubbles, like, you know.
Oh, no.
I know. I had to check myself today. I literally did it to RM Brown.
Like, oh no.
A couple days ago, because it was the first time I got a text from a green bubble in like years. And I made, you know, I'll own up to it, I made a disparaging comment. But now that I'm reading the,
what was the comment?
I said, do you have a fucking Android?
Yeah.
So whatever, that's part of the case against Apple over the iPhone.
I can't believe it's a green bubble lawsuit. Like, you can't shame these users anymore. That's it.
It's fucking effective, dude, because like, I like to think of myself as a pretty anti-big tech, anti-monopoly girl, but I take part in that, quote, social stigma and exclusion game that Apple wants us to play. So whatever. Back to Boeing. Where were we?
Back to Boeing. Where were we?
Where were we?
The Alaska Airlines flight, the door blowing off.
So after the Alaska Airlines flight, I mean, you know, I guess a little credit where credit's due. The response was better this time than it was in 2018 and 2019. You know, they weren't like, what's the problem? Wonder what the pilot was doing. Like, immediately.
The FAA immediately grounded the airplanes, and the Boeing team supported every step of that process.
You know, the CEO came out and took responsibility, but also it's like, you gotta. Like, at the third time, you can't be like, what's going on? Maybe the pilot was stupid. Like, you know, so there was a better response in January. I mean, it's obviously fake, but Dave Calhoun, who's the current CEO of Boeing, he was interviewed by CNBC and like, he's like fake choking up and like kind of like fake crying.
About the door?
What was your reaction when you saw the Alaska Airlines blowout and the video Friday night?
Devastated. Emotional.
He's devastated.
That'll have to take a $10 million pay cut.
Yeah, he was emotional that his bonus might be canceled is the top comment on the YouTube video on CNBC. The second comment is he should get an Oscar for this performance. Oh, wait, the third comment. Damn, these comments are fire. The third comment is this guy has a degree in accounting from 1979. He knows everything there is to know about airplane safety.
That's funny.
Okay, I'm gonna read one more because the more I scroll, the YouTube, more I realize they're really good.
We love a YouTube troll.
The next one is, mistakes will continue as long as MBAs are running engineering companies, literally into the ground. True, literally. Actually, this one, the door just flew off, but your point still stands. Josh 8301. And then the last comment that I'll read is, quote, fire the top management who moved headquarters far from the factories and workers just so they would not hear the problems their policies created. Period. Douglas in Orlando 6260.
Killing it, YouTube trolls.
Hello, it's me, editing Michelle. Dave Calhoun, as of minutes ago, is officially out as Boeing CEO. It's Monday night right now. You guys are going to listen to this on Tuesday, but he just announced that he intends to leave Boeing by the end of the year, and so I just wanted to share that with you. Some breaking news. Did we manifest that, you guys? I think we manifested that. All right, back to the episode. Yeah, I mean, Dave Calhoun, I mean, obviously, this is just what corporate America looks like. These people are career executives, right? This isn't some airplane engineer that rose up the ranks. We know this, but I guess still worth pointing out, like, this guy, before he became the CEO of Boeing, where was he? He was the senior managing director and head of portfolio operations at Blackstone.
Blackstone sell?
It's private equity. It's the world's largest asset manager.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot to say about Blackstone. But the significant point with regards to this story is that it is not an airline manufacturer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, these people are career executives.
I think it's also, yeah, important to mention Boeing has spent about $60 billion returning cash to shareholders over the past 10 years. So they've been concerned with their stock price, which is now suffering because of their safety issues. And so they've been just buying their own stock. They're the biggest buyer of their own stock between 2014 and 2018. That means that they were taking revenue share that could have been used to pay workers more, you know, increase safety, maybe build a better, bigger, safer plane. And they were using it to pay for their own stock, to inflate the price of their stock.
So just to bring it back to John, RIP, John Barnett in 2017 sued Boeing. In those documents, which were just yesterday like obtained by a local Charleston news station, they got like a redacted version of this lawsuit. We learn even more about how Boeing was like kind of retaliating against John and trying to keep him quiet, right? According to these documents, Barnett was, quote, separated from his team and moved to other areas in the plant and blacklisted and blocked from transferring to other Boeing divisions. In addition, he was subjected to a gaslighting campaign in which he was harassed, denigrated, humiliated, and treated with scorn and contempt by upper management, which was calculated to discourage him and others from raising such issues and complying with the law. That's a quote from the filing. And again, this is all because he was being too right and annoying them too much. He was noticing that parts were being stolen from one airplane and installed on a completely different airplane without documentation, without traceability, without engineering review, right?
It's recycling, though.
Yeah, it's pretty green, actually. Boeing is actually extremely woke.
Yeah. What do we think's gonna happen to Boeing? What next is gonna fall off an airplane? We've had wheels fall off. We've had a door fall off.
We had a phone fall out.
This also came up. There was like a passenger who noticed that a wing was fucked up on an airplane and they got the flight canceled because they did discover an issue. So, okay, the FAA is not doing their job, and neither is Boeing. We probably can't count on these whistleblowers anymore now since one got suicided. So it's really up to you when you board a plane. I think everybody should start to learn to survey the aircraft and check for any kind of missing bolts.
You know how the flight attendants always ask you, like, are you willing and able to assist? And that basically means, like, are you able to open the door? But now we need to start asking passengers if they're willing and able to, if the door falls off, to grab the door in midair and bolt it back on.
Yeah.
Are you willing to actually go climb into the bottom and tinker with the one sensor that's triggering the MCAS system?
To make sure that the plane is level.
And you also have to be really well versed in the MCAS software. And if the sensor is faulty, we need passengers to hack into the MCAS system to override it.
Exactly.
All right, you guys. Thanks for listening. Love you to pieces.
God bless you. God bless the United States of America, and God bless Boeing.
jets, low express. Out the country, but the blueberries still connect. On the low, but the yacht got a triple deck. But when you young, what the fuck you expect? Yep, yep. Grand opening, grand closing. Goddamn, your manhole. Crack the can open again. Who you gonna find opening him with no pen? Just draw up inspiration. Who you gonna see you can't replace him with cheap imitations for these generations? Hardcore, do you want more? Cook and roll with the Brooklyn boys. For one last time, I need y'all to roar.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome aboard American Airlines Flight 918 to Miami, Florida. Now please direct your attention to the video screen for an important safety message about our Boeing 767-300 aircraft.